Friends, now we will see how merger and acquisition happens to the companies which are distressed under IBC route, under IBC law. Okay, this is very critical because there are no takers as far as the distressed companies. However, taking into consideration several other aspects, some companies are intending to buy or take over such a distressed company, but it requires the NCLT approval under Indian Bankruptcy Code. How this happens, how this merger and acquisition happens for the companies under distressed under IBC. Okay, we will have the thorough understanding of this. Our objective will be to understand how this IBC enables the going concern sales and distressed merger and acquisition through the corporate insolvency resolution process and liquidation routes. So interpret and apply the Section 29A. Evaluate the role of limitations, role of limits, roles and limits of NCLT, NCLAT, and the Supreme Court, and navigate the key regulatory interface with SEBI, ICDR, CCI merger, RBI, FSP rules. Our presentation structure will consist of the specific articles under IBC. Section 29A, it is a bidder ineligibility. Section 32A, clean slate. Role of NCLT, regulatory interface, process flow resolution, notable cases, learning for you, that is valuation and due diligence challenges for the distressed acquisition and integration issue and challenges unique to IBC deals. Risk and mitigation deals, maker checklist. Now here, what I can say here is that under the IBC, that is Insolvency and Bankruptcy Code, the companies, when it is covered under that, then for them, various regulations need to be complied with in a time-bound manner and within the creditor-driven framework for dealing with the corporate distress. Okay, this, it is a shifted control of the insolvent company. Companies are insolvent. Those who are companies who are under IBC, that is Insolvency and Bankruptcy Court, name itself indicates that these companies are monitored by the IBC professionals. They are insolvent, either they are bankrupt, and there will be a separate process for if anyone take up those companies which went into liquidation. So the Committee of Creditors plays a very vital role into this. So this approach is significantly increased the transparency, accountability, and predictability in distressed acquisition. Nobody normally likes to acquire the companies which are distressed or in liquidation. However, there are certain companies who are showing their interest so as to, with the different reasons, within the strict statutory timeline, judicial supervision, company law tribunal, and regulatory ecosystem involving SEBI, RBI, and other authorities. Section 29A consists of the bidder's ineligibility. Who can be a not eligible? Okay, Section 29A of the Insolvency and Bankruptcy Code 2016 was a landmark reform that fundamentally reshaped the distressed merger and acquisition in India. The objective of this section to introduce is to prevent the moral hazard, which ensuring that those responsible for the corporate failure cannot purchase the asset through their backdoor entry. Okay, then to promote the fair competition and to protect the creditors' interest, this is very important, because company goes into liquidation and they will say, we are liquidated, I am financially not eligible to make, I am not able to make any commitment, fulfill any commitment, right? That is why section 29A is very important. Now, what is the scope of ineligibility? Scope is a bidder, that is resolution applicant, is ineligible. The person who is applying to take over this company, which is distressed company, he is ineligible as per the section 29A of IBC if they are an undischarged insolvent. They are willful defaulter as per RBI guidelines. They have an NP account for more than 1 year, unless due are cleared before the submission of that plan, and have been convicted of an offense punishable with 2 or more years of imprisonment in the last 2 years. So if the applicant, that is bidder, is having any of this misdoing, wrongdoing, then he is not eligible to apply for the bidding process, right? Additional points are also there, that they are disqualified to act as a director under the Companies Act. They are prohibited by SEBI from trading securities, and they have been indulged in the preferential fraudulent transactions, and they are connected with the persons or entities falling under the above categories to prevent the use of proxies. These persons are ineligible. Now, judicial interpretation is given for Section 29A, which consists of Indian courts, especially the Supreme Court, have played a critical role in interpreting the Section 29A. In ArcelorMittal India Private Limited and Satish Kumar Gupta 2018 case, the Supreme Court upheld that the strict application of Section 29A disqualifying the promoter of the defaulting company unless they clear the overdue, that is NPA. Another example here given is the Swiss Rebels Private Limited and Union of India in 2009, where Supreme Court has said that constitutional validity of Section 29A, affirming that exclusion of defaulting promoters is neither arbitrary nor discriminatory. Now, criticism and practical challenges. Overbreadths means some argue the Section 29A excludes even those promoters who may be best placed to revive the company, especially in MSME cases. Then funding structure. Strategic investors may disqualify due to indirect link with a stressed entity. Then delay in resolution. Litigation over eligibility often prolongs resolution process and reduced bidder pool. Then narrow the eligibility sometimes leads to fewer competing bids, lowering the value realization. Reforms and relaxations consist of MSME exemption 2018 section 240A of IBC exempts the MSME promoters from 29A restrictions, recognizing that the unique dependence of the promoter's expertise. Now, conditional curing. Conditional curing means what? Bidder with NPA account may cure ineligibility by clearing the overdue amounts before submission of its application for takeover. Then, evolving jurisprudence is courts have taken the pragmatic view of the balance creditors' interest and resolution efficiency. Strategic implication for distressed merger and acquisition. What would be the strategic implication? strategic implications would be, investor must conduct a rigorous due diligence to confirm the eligibility. Then creating structuring is often used to navigate eligibility hurdle. Section 29A of IBC has contributed to shift towards the professional ownership and the institutional investor in distressed assets, reducing the promoter dominance. Section 32. All about 29 we have seen. Now Section 32. What Section 32 says? Clean slate. Clean slate and liability ring fencing. Clean slate and liability ring fencing. This section is one of the most crucial provisions which facilitate the distressed merger and acquisition, because it addresses major concern of resolution applicant, successor liability, and ensures that successful acquirer of distressed company gets a clean slate free from past offenses and liabilities of the corporate debtors. Now, rationally behind this is there is uncertainty dampened investors' confidence. There was a fear that assets could be attached under the law, or as per Section 32A was enacted to ring fencing the corporate debtor and its assets post-resolution, while ensuring that wrongdoers, promoters, management officers remain accountable. The core provision of Section 32A consists of immunity to the corporate debtor. Once the resolution plan is approved by the NCLT and results into a change of management control, the corporate debtor is immune from past offenses. Then liability of the officers and promoters continues. Promoters and directors, officers, or persons in charge of the company at the time of commission may offense continue to be liable. Now, protection against the asset attachment. The corporate debtor assets cannot be attached or confiscated in relation to the past offenses if the new management is unrelated to the old promoters. Now, judicial endorsement of the Section 32A. Judicial endorsement, there is a case. Manish Kumar versus Union of India in 2016, Supreme Court has given the judgment that the Supreme Court upheld that the constitutional validity of Section 32A. It is observed that the provision strikes a balance. It protects the resolution applicant while ensuring the wrongdoers do not escape the liabilities. Now, JSW Steel and Bhushan Power case, also similar type of judgment is given by the Supreme Court. The practical implication in distressed merger and acquisition. Practical implication is that it boosts the investor confidence by providing the legal certainty. Okay, then it gives the higher value realization with reduced risk. Bidder can quote the higher price, improving the recovery for creditors. There will be a separation of entity from wrongdoers. It ensures that the business and assets survive while individual responsible face the consequences, and cross-law clarity will be there that it mitigates the conflict between IBC and other regulations enforcement status. Right? Then criticism and concern. Criticism and concern consist of moral hazard, regulatory friction, and ambiguity in connected person. Moral hazard is the critics that argues it may allow the companies to evade the liability by enhancing the ownership. Regulatory friction is enforcement of the agencies like ED. They have resisted giving up the powers for the attachment, and ambiguity in connected persons means determining whether the new acquirer is related to the old promoter sometimes creates a dispute or not. Then strategic applications, strategic significance for resolution applicants. Strategic significance is under Section 32A provides assurance of the liability ring fencing. It ensures the fresh starts as per the Chapter 11 of the US practice. It encourages the timely resolution, and since bidders are no longer bogged down by the uncertainty around the prosecution, the asset seizures under Section 32A, it is contingent on procedural integrity of the resolution process. Now, role of NCLT. Now, everything comes to the NCLT, that is National Company Law Tribunal. This is an adjudicating authority under the Insolvency and Bankruptcy Code 2016. This is the authority. So, in the context of distressed merger and acquisition, NCLT's role extends far beyond the conventional regulator. So, it is judicially the gatekeeper, and the NCLT essentially provides the legal certainty to the acquirer, creditor, and other stakeholders. Initiation and admission of CIRP. Initiation and admission. NCLT decides on application filed by the creditors, that is financial, operational, or cooperate debtors themselves under Section 7, 9, 10, and above IBC. Upon admission, it declares a memorandum under Section 14, which suspends all the suits, enforcement, actions, and contracts. This moratorium creates a calm period essential for prospective acquirer as it stops the value erosion while resolution is sought. Now, appointment of oversight of the resolution professional. Appointment of resolution professional. NCLT appoints the interim resolution professional. Later, it is confirmed or replaced as resolution professional RP. The RP manages the debtor as ongoing concern, as a going concern, and collateral claims, and the facilitates the committee creators. By giving the legitimacy to the RP, NCLT ensures that confidence for the bidder, ensure confidence to the bidder. Since the data and disclosure during the resolution process have judicial backing. Now, supervision of resolution process. NCLT monitors the adherence of the statutory timeline. Normally, it is 330 days and issues directions if delays arises. It is the final authority to approve the reject extension of CIRP, which directly affects the deal certainty for the bidders. Thus, NCLT's control creates a time-bound framework contrasting with the often definite timelines of out-of-court restructuring. Approval of resolution plan. Under Section 31 of IBC, NCLT approves the resolution plan approved by the 66% of Committee of Creditors, COC. Its approval makes the plan binding on all the stakeholders. This feature is unique. In conventional merger and application, dissenting creditors and minority shareholders may block the litigate. In IBC deals, NCLT's order overrides the dissent and provides the finality. Enforcement of the clean slate doctrine. Section 32A NCLT plays a crucial role in implementing the Section 32A, which grants the immunity to the acquirer from past offenses of the corporate debtor. By certifying the transfer of ownership free from the past liabilities, NCLT reduces the successor liability risk, making distressed companies more attractive to acquire. Now, balancing interest is judicial oversight. NCLT ensures that operational creditors, employee, and statutory authorities are given equitable treatment in the resolution plan, and even though Committee of Creditors' decisions are commercial, this judicial oversight prevents the complete marginalization of the weaker stakeholders, which could otherwise derail the integration through the litigation or labor unrest. Addressing the litigation and appeal. Post-resolution, NCLT remains the forum for the disputes. Okay? Its ruling provides the clarity on treatment of contract, license, and government issues, government dues. which directly affect the post-acquisition, then it facilitating the regulatory clearance. While sectoral regulators maintain the jurisdiction, NCLT orders are often prerequisite for triggering the further approvals. Example, in case of involving the listed companies, NCLT's approval of the resolution plan is needed before SEBI or stock exchange clearance for relisting of the relisting. Okay, ensuring the transparency and preventing abuse. NCLT examines the allegation of the fraudulent, preferential or undervalued transactions and allows the avoidance of applications by resolution professional, that is RP. Now, regulatory interface affecting the IBC merger and acquisition. SEBI, takeover SAST ICDR. Acquisition pursuant to the IBC resolution plan approved by the NCLT enjoy an open offer exemption under Regulation 10.1DA of SAST. CCI merger control. Combination that meets the threshold requires CCI approval. Then financial servicing providers. Financial service providers, FSP, that is a separate FSP rule. 2019 framework governed the insolvency of certain regulated entities, HFC, with regulator of RBI, NHB, or involvement of any approval and conditions. The process flow of resolution plan and acquisition. This process flow is diagrammatically explained here. First one is admission and moratorium. Second one, which is followed by the public announcement for the resolution plan. Then EOI and the provisional list of eligibility. Then VDR, diligence, as well as FRRP plan, then COC, evolution, HOT, then mandatory regulatory clearance, NCLT approval, followed by implementation, and lastly, it is a withdrawal. This is a sequential process which can be explained like that. First, there will be an admission and moratorium under Section 7, 9, 10, Section 14. Public announcement will be made. Then expression of interest, EOI, expression of interest, provisional list of eligible applicant will be disclosed. VDR diligence, FRFP issuance, plan submission, Committee of Creditors, COC, Committee of Creditors evaluation, and it holds, addresses the feasibility, viability, and legal compliance distribution to classes. Mandatory regulatory clearance is required, NCLT approval, then implementation strategy starts, and there will be withdrawal before the plan is withdrawal. Before the plan is approved, CIRP can be withdrawn under Section 12A with 90% of Committee of Creditors approval, often used where the settlement terms down. Now, notable cases and learning for merger and exchange. These cases you can very well learn at home. Bhushan Steel, SR Steel, then Jet Airways, DHFL, etc. These are the cases you can very well refer at your home. Then valuation and diligence. Valuation and diligence challenges in distressed acquisition. Academic and practical challenges consist of information asymmetry, that short timelines, degraded MIS, missing assets inflate, uncertainty, VDR mitigate, but assets integrity and key contracts verification is crucial. Going concern uncertainty will be there, litigation overhang, sectoral regulation, and complex timelines are also some of the drawbacks. Regulatory overlays, where the pending avoidance of application can affect the recoveries. Bidders should model the upside downside with the without avoidance of the proceeds and negotiate with the benefits. Recent judgment examines the allocation of such recoveries in plan. PMLA ED attachments. This assesses the attachment status and potential of 32A relief. Post approval considers the ring fencing and conditions precedence. Working capital needs, sectoral license consent, and tax modeling evaluate are some of the other points which will be considered while considering the merger and acquisition of the distressed company. Integration issues and challenges unique to IBC deals. Integration issues. Suppose the under the process, scheme or plan is approved by the IBC, then the integration issue come up and certain challenges may come across. Distressed merger and acquisition under insolvency and bankruptcy code differs fundamentally from conventional acquisition because it is a court-driven process. In normal process, it is something different. So, creditor primacy and the clean slate principles under Section 32A. While these features provide the opportunities, they also create an unique post-acquisition integration challenges that acquirer must navigate carefully. First challenge is time-bound resolution versus integration readiness. IBC mandate resolution within 330 days, including litigation. This is compressed timeline, often prioritize the bid success over the integration planning. As a result, the acquirer typically enters with a limited pre-deal operational knowledge, which creates the post-acquisition surprise. So that is another issue after this one. Scheme is approved. Then integration point number two is information asymmetry and forensic legacy. Resolution applicant rely heavily on data from the resolution professional and the committee of creditors, which may be incomplete or contested. Clean slate versus hidden contingency. Section 32A grants the immunity to the new management from past offenses, but ongoing investigation by ED or SEBI may continue against the corporate debtor entity, complicating the operations. Stakeholder complexity, unlike the conventional deals where the acquirer negotiates directly with the promoters, here the acquirer deals with the multi-class creditor body. The post-acquisition operational creditors, employees, and vendors who received the minimal or no settlement under the resolution often shows the resistance, hostility, and litigation disrupting the integration. Disrupted human capital base. Long CIRP duration leads to erosion of skilled talents and collapse of morale. Contractual regulatory continuity gaps. Certain contracts, lease or supply agreement or joint venture, may not automatically transfer the post-resolution requiring a fresh negotiation or NCLT orders. Litigation overhang despite the resolution. Even after approval, disgruntled creditors, shareholders, or the competitors frequently file appeal before NCLAT, Supreme Court. This litigation overhang creates uncertainty in integration planning, especially for capital expenditure, refinancing, and the global partnership. Working capital starvation post-IBC, unlike the conventional merger and acquisition where acquirer inherits the going concern with active banking lines, IBC resolved firms often exist insolvency with the frozen facilities, terminated contracts, and mistrust from the financial institution. Reputational and market perception risk is stigma of insolvency lingers. Customers, suppliers, employees often perceive the entity as failed. Now, cross-border integration constraints. If the insolvent firms had overseas operations, the foreign creditors or courts may not fully recognize the IBC process. Then risk mitigant consists of legal and eligibility risk, nature of risk, ineligibility under Section 29A due to direct or indirect connection with the defaulting promoters or trend entities. Disqualification discovered late in the process can derail the acquisition and expose the bidders to litigation. Mitigation strategy. Strategy should be framed to mitigate the risk, to conduct through the eligibility due diligence, including mapping of the group companies, beneficial owners and affiliates, obtain the legal opinion and compliance certificate before submitting the bid. Now, process and procedural risk consist of CIRP may face the delay beyond the statutory 330 days timeline due to litigation, appeals or regulatory approvals, risk completing the claim of procedural lapses by resolution professional, withdraw of the cases under Section 12A after the significant bidder's investment. Mitigation strategy consists of insist on transparent bid process and the challenges deviation promptly before the NCLT. Include the time-bound milestone and escrow arrangement in resolution plans. Maintain active communication with the committee of creditors and resolution professional to preempt the dispute. Regulatory and approval risk consist of, this is another risk, nature of risk will be, it is requirement of the merger control clearance from Competition Commission of India. Sectoral regulator approval, that is RBI, DGCA, etc. And in listed companies cases, compliance with the SEBI regulations. Mitigation strategy consists of undertake pre-filing consultation with regulators and file early for CCI approval, structured plan for the conditional precedence and leverage the SEBI's open offer exemptions and ICDR relaxations available for IBC. Financial and valuation risk consists of difficulty in assessing the true value of the distressed assets due to unreliable record, litigation overhang, and operational uncertainty. And mitigation for this is use multiple valuation methods, liquidation value, DCF, comparable, and apply scenario-based modeling. Enforcement and liability risk consist of assets that may be subject to attachment by enforcement agencies. And the mitigation is conduct a litigation mapping and assess the scope of Section 32A protection, negotiate indemnities, or plan carve out for regulatory risk where it is, wherever it is possible. Integration and the operational risk is nothing but employee attrition, vendor disputes, and loss of customer may undermine the rival. The mitigation for this is the prepare day zero integration plan, offer retention bonuses and incentive for the critical employees, and install independent internal audit, compliance system immediately post acquisition. Strategic and market risk consist of business model that may be structurally unviable, and sudden change in regulation as well as public perception in reputational risk. The mitigation consists of align the acquisition with long-term strategy objective, undertake the sectoral and regulatory scenario analysis, and develop a brand repositioning strategy to overcome the stigma of insolvency. Friends, with this, we conclude our discussion on distressed assets under the merger and acquisition under IBC rule. Thank you very much.